It was the year of fans.
The year of engagement.
The year we had great conversation.
It was the year of reruns.
The year JP joined us.
The year of moves.
And the year of joy.
It was the news show.
It was the end of bloopers.
It was the year everything connected.
The year is 2018. The Place, the Babylon Project podcast.
Let's try this. Hi there, Babylon 5 fans. Welcome to the Babylon Project Podcast. This is Raul Ybarra, and I am joined by my good friends, Jim Arrowood and J.P. Harvey, and our resident lurker hiding in the background, the monster in the closet.
Yeah, somewhere back there. Say hello, J.P.
Hello,
J.P.
How are you gentlemen doing tonight?
Good.
Doing fantastic.
If I'm sounding a little odd, it's been because I've spent half my day doing team building exercises.
Oh, no kidding. Well,
no kidding.
If I sound a little odd, it's probably because I am.
they don't seem interested in my follow-up suggestion, though, to really gain the trust. Stick us out in a field, put a mask on us, and stick an airsoft or a paint gun in our hands.
Oh, so your whole company would be outstanding in the field.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not no, doing anything.
There's nothing like building camaraderie, like shooting the other guy who's about to shoot your buddy in the face with a paintball.
Oh. Okay, moving right along.
Alrighty. Moving right along.
Yes, our show tonight is the 10th episode of the 4th season, Racing Mars.
We're coming up real fast on that halfway mark, aren't we?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, now, Racing Mars, what does that mean? Do either one of you know? I've been thinking about that, and Racing Mars.
I couldn't put it together.
As in an external reference, or why would he actually call it that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the only thing I can think of is it's, you know, something of a race to get to Mars. And it's a bit of a race of who's going to get Mars first, Clark or the Resistance. And I don't mean the Mars Resistance. I mean Sheridan and the Army of Light, I guess is a better phrase.
Okay. I'll accept that for lack of anything better.
Just something I'm picking out of my head at the moment, but yeah, it's a interesting episode.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and whenever we get the Marcus Franklin combo, and I know I've said this before, there's a good chemistry there.
Oh yes, there is.
So
it's such mm-hmm. a good chemistry that it seems that their relationship could deepen.
It will in this episode.
But let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. I mean, picking out patterns and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Steve. No, that's next episode.
Right.
Yeah.
So are we ready for a summary?
We are ready for a summary. Anything to make me shut up.
Archive. Access. Initiated.
Franklin and Marcus are approaching Mars, and they meet a bizarre fellow traveler calling himself Captain Jack, who turns out to be their contact, who will lead them to the Resistance. Franklin and Marcus are led into a tunnel where they are to meet the Resistance leader known as Number One, But first, they have to undergo the scrutiny of Number One's lieutenant, Number Two, who takes their identikarts to check them out. Captain Jack seems eager to have them meet Number One right away. When Number Two returns, he tells them that their identities don't check out and they are to be killed. But Number One arrives on the scene saying that she wants to see their faces before they die. Captain Jack produces a weapon and tries to kill Number One. Franklin intervenes and saves Number One while Marcus grabs a gun and kills an invisible alien on Captain Jack's shoulder. Captain Jack contacts Number One while traveling in a transport tube, telling her that the alien on his shoulder was in control of him and he has to kill himself because the alien always grows back. Sheridan wants to learn why Garibaldi was so negative during his interview with ISN and goes to confront him. In their first of two encounters, Sheridan loses his temper and they part ways. During their second encounter, it seems like there might be a chance for reconciliation between the two until an alien woman begins treating Sheridan like a demigod, which sets Garibaldi off. He hits Sheridan. Sheridan then tells him he will be thrown off the station at the slightest infraction of the rules. Garibaldi is then recruited into a small group that believes Sheridan has to be stopped for his own good. Having spent their three nights together, Delenn informs Sheridan that it is now time for them to explore each other's centers of pleasure, which is done, much to Sheridan's discomfort, with a group of Minbari observers outside the room to be sure that things don't go too far. Earth's blockade of Babylon 5 is causing some supply problems on the station, and Ivanova takes it upon herself to remedy the situation. She gathers a small group of smugglers and offers them perks to start smuggling useful things onto the station. Well, there it is.
Yep. There it is.
This is a strange episode.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah, things are going a couple of different directions.
You know, and what was funny, I was going to say, a lot of it just skips back and forth between the Garibaldi arc and the Franklin Marcus arc, you know, bouncing back and forth. But I noticed in my notes, but before the show, I completely forgot about, oh yeah, there's the Ivanova. There's a little Ivanova wedge in the middle there.
Yeah, there always seems to be one of those little things that either resolve a situation or point to something in the future.
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat the way those little things get put in there, and sometimes you catch them and sometimes you don't.
Yep. And in this case, it's got some of the best Ivanova lines in the series.
Yes.
Character files opened.
We have one huge list of guest casts.
Yes, we have a small army of guest cast tonight. Start out with Jeff Griggs as Dan Randall's ear. We only about see the side of his head for just a few seconds on a replay of Mike's interview, but he's still listed in the credits.
Which is, so, I guess, enough to get a credit.
Sure. Okay, Clayton Landy as Number Two. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He also showed up on Deep Space Nine at some point, and he has lost track of his credits, according to IMDb. Yeah. He's been in 40 plays, 40 films, 180 TV episodes. He's a performer, actor, director, producer, writer, and a teacher.
Yeah.
So, a very interesting person.
I guess he gets bored easy.
Yeah.
With a list of credits like that.
Yeah. Sounds like he's kind of busy. Okay, moving on. We got Marjorie Monaghan as Number One. Her first of seven appearances on Babylon 5. She's also been in Quantum Leap. She was in a show, a younger teen show called Space Rangers. Her character was named JoJo, for those who may remember that. She was in Star Trek Voyager as Freya. In an episode where she was helping the doctor fight the Grendel. Okay, The Warlord, Battle for the Galaxy, a TV movie, and she was also on Andromeda.
I've got to finish watching Andromeda someday.
I've never really sat down and watched it all. I've seen bits here and there, but okay, we got Mark Schneider as Wade.
Mm-hmm.
First of four appearances on Babylon 5. He was also in Knight Rider. Donovan Scott as John Demeter or Captain Jack. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5, and he has one other genre credit in something called Homeboys in Outer Space, which I don't think I even want to know what that's about.
There's some shows you don't want to even ask about. I think that's on that list.
Exactly. We have under co-starring Jeff Mead as Smuggler Number One. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5. He was in Star Trek Enterprise and in the 2008 The Day the Earth Stood Still movie. Okay, featuring Kerry Dobro as the Brakiri woman.
Mm-hmm.
Her second appearance on Babylon 5. Her first was as Dr. Harrison in the episode Exogenesis, the seventh episode of the third season. Also, she will be in a Call to Arms film, TV film, and in 13 episodes of Crusade.
Yeah, so she's on the main cast of Crusade.
Yes. Timothy Starks as the guard. He was helping number one and number two. I don't know. Maybe he's number three. This is his only appearance on Babylon 5.
He's in. And,
yes.
One, two, dot, 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 in.
Yeah. Okay.
Sorry.
All right. And then we have Brian Tahash as Smuggler Number Two. And this is also his only appearance on Babylon 5. So that is our parade of guest casts.
That's a lot of guests.
It is, quite a few.
So I got to admit up front, I remember having a huge crush on Marjorie. And I don't know if it was from the first time I saw B5 or if it was from some of those other shows. But
yeah, I know what you mean. She's got very dark eyes. Deep eyes. They're kind of hypnotic, mm-hmm. wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, I can certainly understand that.
And she really is as tall as she seems. She's a six-footer.
Yeah.
What's interesting is she's been married to Grant Rosenberg. Because I had looked that up. So she's married to Grant Rosenberg, which Masters of Science Fiction, Eureka, Jeremiah, Outer Limits, you know, producer in the genre.
Ah.
So she's married into the genre geekdom even.
Well, she's quite the actor and interesting character. She plays some interesting people.
Well, number one is certainly what was certainly a singular character.
Mm-hmm.
Initiating plot analysis.
Okay. The episode itself, though. It seems Sheridan's a little worried about supplies. The embargo is putting a bit of a crunch on getting stuff in from Earth. So Susan kicks him out of his office.
Yeah, he's upset. He's not getting his oranges on a regular basis, so he's going...
yep.
Probably some coffee problems and things like that.
Well, but Susan's growing her own black market coffee on the station.
Ah, but he says, you know, the right now, at this point, the shortages aren't bad.
Mm-hmm.
But down the road, not too far down the road, things are going to start getting serious.
Right, and
it's going to cut into the sushi shipments.
Yeah.
Say that.
That's hard to say. Sushi shipments.
So yeah, very, very slowly and enunciate.
Right. Because we want to keep our show family
friendly. Yes, we don't want, we do not want the explicit tag.
Yep. But Susan says, don't worry. She's going to arrange some black market suppliers and she's going to force Sheridan to take a break.
Yeah, she commits mutiny, basically.
Yep. She shoos him out of his office, sits and takes over.
His desk, grabs his papers, starts shuffling his papers, and says, get out of the office. You're done. You haven't had a break in 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't seem to protest too much, really.
No, not too bad.
Leaves with a grin on his face.
But he's got nothing to do.
Yeah.
He gets back to his quarters and grabs the remote, and he can't get the movie channel, and he can't get the sports channel, and he can't get the porn channel, and he can't get all he can get is ISN.
Yeah, but you're jumping ahead here.
A little bit,
but yeah, and it's what he only can get on ISN that's really gonna frost him.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But in the meantime, what is up with Franklin and Marcus playing I Spy?
Absolute boredom.
Marcus is getting annoying, at least for Steven.
I think he would be a bit annoying for me, too.
he almost seems to be enjoying the game, which is a little scary.
Well, see, and that's the neat thing about Marcus. He seems to have the ability to entertain himself.
Though it seems that entertaining of himself equates to annoying of Mark or annoying of Franklin.
It may not. Right. So he can entertain himself, but he may not necessarily be entertaining to others.
Yeah. The question is he going to survive the trip?
Well, I don't think anybody has a blaster along, do they?
No, but.
And if things were going to get ugly, fortunately then for one or the other of these guys, they get interrupted. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, well, they're playing I Spy, so what else should happen? But they find a spy. Cat and Jack.
Yeah, Marcus disappears, and Franklin turns around to say something to him, and he's not there anymore. I hate it when you do that. He comes around the other side of the crates with this guy.
And no relation to the Harkness family or Doctor Who.
Mm-mm.
Not even close.
No. Oh, gosh. I love it, though. You stay on your side, we'll stay on ours.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And then the...
Yeah, I just wanted to invite you for dinner, you know.
Yep. Zips open the package of instant heats.
Yeah. And after, of course, Marcus hauls out a gravel bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Real food. He waves this under Franklin's nose.
And he's practically drooling.
Yeah. And Marcus grabs him and hauls him away. What a wet blanket this guy is.
Mm-hmm.
So
I wonder if they actually put something in the pouch just to get that drool effect out of him.
I don't know. But he played it. Yeah, it looked like dry ice, you know, boiling off or whatever. You notice, I didn't notice anybody actually take a bite out of anything in the pouch.
Mm-hmm. No. Nope.
So.
I think you're right.
Whatever was in there wasn't really edible.
Yeah. Well, like you said, all the television stations were jammed, except for ISN, which is playing the Sheridan, the Bab 5 interviews on continuous loop.
Yeah. And we just happened to get the one with Mike.
Yeah. And Sheridan is getting a bit fed up with that in particular.
Well, it's understandable.
So, yeah. Well, he finally decides he's going to say something to Mike, confront him about it. And he's doing it for the right ideas and the right motives, but shall we say it's not exactly a productive conversation?
No, it sure isn't.
Michael, you got a minute?
Yeah, make it quick.
I've been meaning to talk to you about something.
Yeah, the ISN interview. Look, Captain, I don't work for you anymore.
I know, and I supported your decision, but...
Yeah, but now you don't like it because I'm challenging your authority, right?
There's a difference between challenging and undermining. Now, your opinion
is my opinion. I'm entitled. You know, I thought free speech was one of the things you were supposed to be fighting for.
I'm just trying to find out where all this anger is coming from. I thought we were friends.
Yeah, well, maybe we both thought wrong.
Michael, we've got everything on the line right now. Clark's propaganda is doing a good enough job of smearing us without one of us giving it credibility. And what you said about me, I really don't care. But you're damaging the cause and hurting the station. It wouldn't be so bad if I at least understood it, but I don't. If I did something to upset you...
Look, it'd take too long to explain, and I don't have the time. You see, I'm meeting a client in a few minutes, and he doesn't like authority figures, whether they're in or out of uniform. So why don't you go back to playing God and let the rest of us, mere mortals, get back to business?
All right, if that's the way you want it, fine. I don't know what's gotten into you, but it's not my problem anymore. I've got a job to do. I can't let anyone interfere with that, not even you. Now, privately, you think what you want, but publicly, I don't want to hear this stuff anymore. Otherwise, I'm going to have to make things difficult for you around here. I don't want to have to do that, but I will.
Don't threaten me, Sheridan. I'm a private citizen now.
With an obligation to keep the oath you gave me and Ivanova and the Alliance. You held a position of authority here. Because of that, people took stock in what you say. You broke that trust. You knew what was at stake with that interview, and you deliberately gave aid and comfort to the enemy in front of a billion people.
Oh, a little criticism and the whole universe starts falling apart.
Enough! Now, if you've got a legitimate complaint, you make it. But if it's a personal attack in disguise, it stops right here.
Hey, I didn't make this personal. You did that all by yourself.
What are you talking about?
The people who work for you, they're not following the cause. They're following you. Did you ever hear of a little thing called a cult of personality? Well, it's not about us. It's not about doing what's right. It's about how you're fulfilling prophecy, how you went to Zahadum and came back alive. Hell, you even came back from the dead. Could we possibly get any more messianic than that? You know what the real problem is? Is that you're starting to buy into your own publicity. And maybe, just maybe, it's time that somebody punches a hole in that.
Someone like you?
Yeah.
I don't buy it. It's just a cheap excuse for crummy behavior. Bottom line is, you're misusing your authority and I won't have it. You want to be mad at me? Fine, you be mad at me. But don't hurt everyone else just to get at me.
You know, I just had a thought while I was listening to that. This is a complete 180 from the lecture he gave Jakar about you follow your CEO because he has the moral authority. You know, you remember that?
Mm-hmm. I think he would respond and say, he's not my commanding officer anymore. I'm a civilian.
Yeah. But
Sheridan hits a good point about him having been in a position of authority. Mm-hmm. And so his private or his personal opinion carries more weight than just somebody. And I think that's what's got Sheridan riled up. I think it became clear in this scene, too. Sheridan doesn't know. He truly has no idea what's going on with Mike.
No.
I mean, he is genuinely asking. Yes. I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. I don't know where this is coming
And from. Sheridan approached him amicably.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have a little talk here. You know, Sheridan's not happy about that interview, and it is undermining his authority. Mike does have a basket full of secrets. If he started singing, you know, it could be very, very bad for the station.
You know, and private citizen or not, I thought he does still have certain, at least in the U.S. military, aren't there still certain legal obligations?
Yeah, certain things that you're exposed to, you go to the grave with. Mm-hmm. And you sign a legal document that says as much. So it's not just, wink. Hey, don't, when you leave, don't talk about this stuff. There's actually a commitment, a legal commitment.
Yeah.
That you make. And, I think that's what he's kind of alluding to without them running down the,
mm-hmm.
Frankly, wasting the time trying to set all that up. He just uses that line that he used. You were in a position of authority.
Right.
So your words are your position. What's funny is if, Sheridan says, I don't understand where this is coming from. And in just a minute or so, he basically gets told, he doesn't understand why, but he gets told where it's all coming from. Mike says he's playing God.
Mm-hmm.
What was the phrase? Cult of personality. Have you heard of a cult of personality?
Yeah.
You're buying into your own publicity.
And that last bit, that's completely coming out of whole cloth.
Well, that is on the surface, though. That's not the real motivation behind...
Well, there's not even a surface hint of that.
Mike's animosity. We know that it goes way deeper.
Yep.
Yes.
It's programmed. Yeah.
And we know that Sheridan, who is, I'll just say he's accepting of this narrative that is playing out in front of the public in the station, but he doesn't like it, or he's uneasy with it. If you remember back to when he was initially walking the, were they in the Zocalo?
Yes.
With Lorien, and Lorien basically says, you've got to play this part, or I forget what the phrase was, what the line was. You know, people need to believe or something about that. And you could tell Sheridan wasn't comfortable with this messianic thing. He may not totally understand how he survived, but he doesn't want people thinking more of it than it is. And Lorien says, you have to let this play out. Those weren't the exact
words. Well, he does. He does have to let it play out up until the end of the Shadow War. The Shadows and the Vorlons and the first ones are all gone. Right. Now he should be able to get back to being normal again. And he never did encourage it.
You mean the cult of Sheridan, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, you will see a little later, he's trying to put an end to it. Now, the question is this programming supposed to be something to do damage to Sheridan? Or is the friction between him and Sheridan supposed to be setting him up for something else, for another task? And I ask that because, well, we see someone look over Mike's shoulder. There's some people in the background paying very close attention to this.
Right.
So I'll until a little later.
Okay.
Because that'll be an important part. So, well, not just this episode, but several on.
Yeah. And then we have to get back to that ship going to Mars. Captain Jack is on his seventh or eighth pouch of Insta-Heat. Something or other.
And it turns out that Lita had a little Vorlon. Captain Jack is their contact.
Yeah.
He's been yanking their chains and checking them out.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't you tell us, right?
Right.
Yeah, you should have just said so in the first place.
Yeah, and Franklin immediately starts scarfing Insta-Heats himself, it seems.
Yeah. I wonder if they come in pizza.
That would be
burritos.
Oh, gosh.
Well, he's got Insta-Heat burrito. I love it.
Well, he's got their fake IDs, and it seems that, there was some problems with the arrangements, so Marcus and Franklin are newlyweds.
Yep, and I love the way they play it. It is perfect.
Yeah, I laughed my butt off.
Uh-huh.
It surprises them a little bit, and then they run with it.
Mm-hmm. And it comes back especially up again Marcus. A couple of times. Yeah.
Yeah. Well... That someone that I mentioned, I can unch, right, Jim?
Yes.
That someone makes contact with Mike, and you know, he seems, and this is what led to my question, he seems to know an awful lot about Mike.
Oh, yeah.
And what he's been up to, and he's appealing to Mike's support of some generic, nondescript, mythical... The cause.
Mm-hmm.
What cause?
You'll let Mike fill in what that cause is.
Yeah.
Getting
Sheridan the help he needs.
Oh.
Right?
Yeah.
But this guy is very deliberate, isn't he?
Oh, he is.
He doesn't come up and kind of wax philosophical, and I see you got a problem, and I do, I'm kind of worried. He goes right at it.
Well, you know, when they first come on the scene, though, the way they have that scene set up, it looks like we're about to have a fight. Because we got four guys, and Mike is boxed in the corridor, and he can't go anywhere without walking into one of these guys.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a little bit of a misdirection there. Now, why would Wade need three other guys with him on this? I don't understand.
Security?
I guess.
If he's important, if he turns out to be important enough.
Now, the way these guys were dressed, the light bulb went on and it was like, Psycor, Psycor, Psycor.
Yep. They're not in uniforms, but they're in these dark, kind of bland clothes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, black. Either black or very dark gray. And
yeah.
And that was the first impression I had, too, is these guys are like, PsyCorps field agents as opposed to PsyCorps uniformed guys or something.
Yeah, hired henchmen, who knows. But I'll tell you what, Mike, through this episode, is being absolutely super snarky.
Uh-huh. Well, even with these guys, you know, his perspective at this point, he's got his beef with Sheridan, but he's still at a point where it's clear he's not going to betray him. He's not going to sell him out or do anything.
Oh, yeah, right. I'm not going to sell Sheridan out. Well, you already did, partner.
Yeah.
This is where, to me, it's clear, and we've seen this before, where it seems when he's in the presence of Sheridan and that programming kicks in, he is a totally different guy than when Sheridan's not present. So you'll see him want to take Sheridan apart in his presence and then turn around and somebody will say, I don't like him either. Why don't you help me punch a hole in him? And he goes, I'm not going to betray him.
Yeah.
And I think he's honest when he says that. He doesn't think outside the presence of Sheridan, that programming settles or it weakens. Mm-hmm. Something happens. And so his first reaction is, hey, I got a beef with the guy, but I'm loyal to him still.
Right.
Which is kind of what Sheridan was appealing to him to do, right?
It was exactly what he was appealing to him.
Yeah, so it's interesting that he will, it's almost polar differences. One is a professional, I got a beef with the guy, but I'm not going to sell him out. The guy walks up, and all he wants to do is take him apart.
Yeah.
So it's real clear, I think, as a viewer, to see that something, you know, it's probably a third or a fourth confirmation at this point, since his return, that there is something in control of him. It's not...
Right. It was either last episode or the episode before that we had mentioned that. And it's getting progressively worse and worse and worse.
Yes.
So it's almost schizophrenic.
It'll all come out in the wash here in a few episodes.
Yeah.
So we're on Mars now. Marcus
and Captain Jack's filling them in on the propaganda.
Yeah. And it seems like they don't know a great deal about the Shadow War.
No wonder they're losing the propaganda war. They're keeping all of that covered up. And speaking of covered up, Jack's definitely a bit odd. And, you know, Jim, you had mentioned Marcus is still writing Franklin about their cover story.
Hey, yeah. Got to pick out patterns and who knows how long Dad's going to live and all these other things. And it's like, can we set a date, please?
Well, your mother.
Yes.
Whatever the comment was.
Oh, gosh. That was one of the funnier moments that... Well, actually, no, because we're about to hit what is another one of those moments, in fact.
With our favorite.
Yeah.
With our favorite Russian officer.
Yes.
So
Ivanova has volunteered to do this now.
Yep. And some cargo she had sent for has arrived.
Yeah.
Yeah. It seems she's recruiting. Let's go ahead. Play it.
I realize in the past that we've had our little ups and downs. I mean, some of you have tried to smuggle in dust, weapons, other items on our prohibited list, and we've had to come down on you. That's our job. Most days, nobody gets hurt. Oh, is the arm feeling better now?
Yeah, sure, fine. Except when it rains and it hurts all up through here where you broke
it. Yes, well, since it never rains on Babylon 5, that should encourage you to spend more time here. But we hardly see any of you anymore.
Things are different now. Used to be we get caught, we spend a couple of days in the brig. Yeah, maybe somebody gets tossed around, but nobody gets killed or stuck in prison for life. If those Earth Patrol catch us running shipments into Babylon 5... No. Mm-mm. No deal.
Same here. Dust market's gone down. And since the war, there's guns all over the place. Nobody's buying. Profits are down everywhere.
Well, then perhaps now would be a good time to invest in the future. Look, here's what I'm offering. Instead of the usual destructive crap you guys bring in here, I want you to start transporting useful things. Those food items that we can't grow here, medicines we can't fabricate, spare parts for fighters and shuttles and other ships. Did I say something funny?
Get real, Ivanova. There's no profit in that, not enough to justify the risk.
That's where you're wrong. First, if you cooperate, we'll provide fighter escorts to protect your ship, starting as far away as 4 jumps from here. Now, that should cut down on your risk factor. Second, for as long as you're operating on our behalf, we will take care of your ships. We've got the best mechanics in the sector. Maintenance, fuel, you name it, no cost. We'll upgrade your data systems and supercharge your engines. And if you have an accident, we'll repair your ships. And sooner or later, your ships will have accidents.
My pilots don't have accidents.
They will. I'll see to it.
You wouldn't.
I've got a 200-megawatt pulse cannon in the forward cargo bay that says otherwise. The odds of you having such an accident are greatly reduced once you sign on with us. And since we'll be maintaining your ships, it would be in your best interest to keep us supplied with fresh parts. You're not going to get rich. But take my word for it, you're going to make a profit. And finally, I don't want to name names or anything, but we did a little checking around, and some of you are wanted by EarthGov on charges ranging from trespassing to arms smuggling to assault on Earth property. Now, once all of this is over, we are willing to overlook all of that. Everyone's entitled to a fresh start.
You're even willing to forget about that business?
Yes, even though it did make Mr. Garibaldi's hair fall out. You had no way of knowing what was in that bottle, and that's my story, and I'm sticking to it, just in case he asks. You only bring in what we tell you to bring in. No weapons, no dust, no more illegal or dangerous items. You play it clean, and we'll work with you. Look, you'll have more money. Your ships will be in perfect running order, and you'll have an investment in the future. What more could you ask for?
You seen anybody, Ivanova?
It's awesome. The ending part there.
I'll tell you what, she's quite the salesperson. I'm thinking about taking this deal.
Yeah. She'll help them avoid accidents.
Sure.
So these guys are smugglers, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And she says, I need you to smuggle in things that are useful to us. These are things that are currently not getting in because of the embargo.
Yep.
And then she says, I thought this was funny. You know, some of you are smuggling this and some are smuggling that. I want you to stop it. No more of that. No more illegal items. But she's asking them to smuggle illegal items and just different ones.
Well, not illegal, Five. Not illegal on Babylon 5.
Right, yeah. Right. But I thought, how funny that mm-hmm. is. Right? Stop bringing the illegal stuff in. We just want you to get drugs we can't produce here and food and this, that, and the other. But those are all things that, according to EarthGov, aren't going to be coming in either.
Right.
So it's still illegal stuff. But yeah, I thought that was mm-hmm. a cool bit of writing. Right.
Well,
there.
Yeah. And it's a lot less profitable. However, they'll get their ships fixed for free, or if they don't cooperate, they'll get them broken.
Yeah.
Right.
Gonna have an accident. My pilots don't have accidents.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, they will. Hey, they will.
I'll be sure they do.
I'll see to it.
Hey, and we found out what happened to Mr. Garibaldi's hair in that, I guess, second season.
The liquid.
So, racing back to Mars.
Oh, goodness.
Jack, as Jim pointed, has taken them in and enter the Resistance.
Mm-hmm.
Not a very pleasant first meeting.
No, they're not friendly at all.
Well, apparently there were some communication problems, and mixed up with that, it sounds like there's a rumor or plans for a hit being targeted on number one.
Mm-hmm.
So, Tex, as I refer to him, number two, going to check their real IDs. And I guess I can't blame him for being a little suspicious.
Yeah, I guess. Did his accent get a little annoying? Yes. Okay. I didn't know if I was the only one that felt that way, but, you know, I just, the entire time the guy is talking, I'm hearing, "Do not forsake me, oh my darling."
it was distracting. His accent distracted me.
Just out of curiosity, was that his real accent? If anyone has seen him in any of his other, it might be, because I think in his credits, didn't he do an episode of Walker, Texas Ranger?
Oh, most likely, but everybody's been on Walker, Texas Ranger, but
yeah.
I don't know if that's his real accent, because every now and then, you know, it was sounding definitely Texas, but every now and then it started to sound a little Cajun too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you mean. So, Jack's continuing to be a little odd.
Oh yeah, he's on his 40th Instaheat
yep.
package. And the
dripping sweat with an overcoat on.
Yeah.
And what were you about to?
I was going to say, and the guard, the one that's referred to in the credits, walks by and says, "Man, you eating another one of those things? I thought you were on a diet."
Yeah. Oh, gosh. But even he's noticing he's acting a little odd. And Jack's sharing pics of his daughter with Franklin.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, keep track of the little inconsistencies here. It turns out their IDs don't check. Number two is about to do the deep six number on Franklin and Marcus.
Mm-hmm.
So, number one, Marjorie shows up. You know, it's season five, we finally find out the character's name.
Yeah, she does have a name.
Uh-huh. But at this point, she's still just number one, shows up, gives them a little more time. It's like she wants to hear the story. And we find out who the assassin is. Captain Jack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they shoot, was it Marcus that fight? Yeah, I think it was Marcus shot a keeper off of his neck.
Yes.
Okay, was that a lucky shot, or?
He said he could see him.
Ranger training?
Well, Franklin saw it or something too, because remember when he goes, "Marcus," or whatever, Marcus goes, "Yeah. I see it." So they both saw something, even though we don't see it as viewers mm-hmm. on the show.
I wonder if it's a matter of that Jack is fighting it that hard that it's a little mind play of invisibility kind of weakens mm-hmm. a bit.
Yes.
Or, you know, an untold part of the story could be at least Marcus, even though I said Franklin saw it too. They knew enough about the keepers at this point that they recognized the behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not that they see the creature. They see the behavior that says this guy's got that problem. So I see it isn't the critter itself. It's and then you know where to shoot because they seem to park in the same place all mm-hmm. the time.
Yeah. Right? Somehow they seem to have enough lab equipment for him to do a dissection and analysis. And Marcus or Franklin, no, I guess it was Franklin, notes that all the hints Jack has been giving, constantly eating the wrapped up in the coat, the actually talking about wrong facts on the planets that he knew that they would have to know about, but I'm guessing the keeper doesn't know about. And kind of sad with Jack because he's run off, and as he puts it, the keepers grow back. They always grow back. And he's going to find out just how tough the transport tubes on Mars are, and blows up him and the car and the keeper with it.
Yep.
Ah.
How did he know that they grow back?
I have no idea.
And who put it on him and why?
Right. He said they, but he didn't say who they were, did he?
No.
That's a real good question. it seems it's either going to be the Psi-Corps or Clark, someone who was in league with the Shadows.
Mm-hmm.
But
and, well, and
why?
And we know because of that book that we are not going to mention in this show tonight. That
what book is that?
We're not going to mention it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. But we know from that book that these keepers belong to the Drak.
Uh-huh.
So, and the Drak were servants of the Shadows, and the Shadows were in league with Psi-Corps and Clark.
And Clark.
So, apparently, somehow, in a roundabout sort of way, the keeper got put on Jack because he was supposed to kill number one. So, we know that Clark has got a long reach.
Yeah, and connections not just with the Shadows but their allies, it would seem.
Yes. But then there's that bit that we have not discussed yet.
This is not promising for Londo, is it?
No, not at all. We're going to go back a little ways.
Or is that a different bit?
No, we're going to go back a little ways, and we're going to talk about Sheridan, who is kind of unhappy about how things have gone with Mike. He's upset with himself for letting himself get angry. And Delenn enters the Zen garden where he's kind of sitting there staring off into space.
If you could look any more unhappy, please do not tell me. There are some things I would rather not know.
I'm just mad at myself. I went to Michael today. I figured we could talk this through. And we ended up going around and around, and I got hot, then he got hot, and then I stormed out. He's like a complete stranger. A few months ago, I would have trusted him with my life, but now, I don't know. Sometimes feel like I'm better at fighting wars than relationships. You know, I keep thinking that I can turn him around if I could just figure out the right words.
He has to find his own way, and so do you. In the past, those two paths have crossed. Now perhaps they don't. It is the way of things.
I know. Doesn't make it any easier. Anyway, I didn't mean to get so morose. You came looking for me for a reason.
Ivanova tells me that you have taken the day off.
Gunpoint.
Then this may be a good time. As you know, when Minbari become close, as we have become close.
Not another ritual.
It is our tradition.
I'm just about ritualed out.
John.
Well, how many more of these rituals are there?
Depending on the length of time we take before fully committing to one another, which clan is in dominance at the time, the types and amounts of offerings made at temple. As many as, 47? No, 50.
50? 50. Anyone ever elope on your world?
It has happened, but it's always a great disgrace.
Disgrace to the family, the caste, the clan. Got it.
That's why Minbari do not have problems with relationships. We have a ritual for everything. For being together, for being apart, for meeting, for saying goodbye, for solving disputes.
All right. Which is this one?
It is called Shan Fal, the third movement of preparation and mutual understanding.
Oh, that old one, yeah.
In a little while, you come to my quarters, where we spend the night together, discovering one another's centers of pleasure. It is done with great deliberation, prayerfully, with respect and meditation. It is good for us to know all we can about one another should we continue the joining of our hearts and our blood. So, you can meet me there. Unless, of course, you can find something of equal value sitting here and staring at plants, but feeling guilty about things you cannot change.
And another ritual. And as I mentioned in our last show, the aliens just seem to have a ritual for everything.
At least the Mimbari.
Oh, well, Klingons do, too.
Yeah. What I really want to know is, how did she keep a straight face?
Well, who knows how many takes it was. I'm sure probably just one, no doubt, but...
And how did I miss that in our prep notes when there's a big highlight swipe across the text?
I don't
with
know.
Your purple ink response to it.
Yeah, I know.
Long day.
Way too long of a day.
Okay, now we went through all the other stuff, and we wind up with Sheridan
trying to apologize to Mike.
Approaching Mike for the second time, saying, look, I really am sorry that things got out of hand. Let's try this again.
It doesn't go well.
Well, it to me, it seems like, okay, Mike stands up and faces Sheridan and doesn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And then in comes the Brakiri lady.
Mm-hmm. Are you him?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
And that's where things start going downhill in more ways than one.
Yep. It goes from a shouting man, and Sheridan's obviously, it's like, lady, please knock it off.
Yeah. And he's trying to do something, and then Mike grabs her and starts shaking her, and she's just blah, 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 all over, just drooling all over the place, and Mike is yelling at her, and you know what?
He attacks her, frankly.
Seriously, and you know, that entire scene, Mike and the Brakiri woman were both, I thought, way over the top.
Yeah.
This was more Star Trek-ish than Babylon 5-ish, in my mind.
Yeah.
Well, Garibaldi's definitely abnormal.
Well, this was even worse than his normal abnormal.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he's grabbing somebody and shaking them, and she's just, and she's overacting, and he's overacting, and I don't know. I was just kind of uncomfortable with that whole scene.
Well, in that case,
I wonder if that's...
I think you're about to say the same thing. Go ahead, JP.
Oh, well, you know, we had mentioned earlier that it seems the effects of his programming are getting worse.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it was acted out well or not, that certainly was reinforced right mm-hmm. here. That he, every time he gets around Sheridan, this is getting worse. And here he actually gets physical, and he takes that anger out on somebody who's actually the instrument for activating that programming.
Right.
Are you the one? Sheridan, as I recall, says, it's not what you think, or something like that. And then he's shut down at that point. Garibaldi loses it.
Yep.
But it is, in fact, as you observed earlier, Jim, it's just continuing to get worse and worse and worse.
Yeah.
There was a funny line in here, though, or a little mm-hmm. bit funny. Did you guys catch it? When the lady is going on and on and on, and Mike just, I think it's just before he actually gets physical with her, says, come on, he's not the Pope. And then he says, he looks nothing like her.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I did catch that. Little side tidbit. Straczynski got all kinds of grief for that one.
Oh, he did?
Yep.
Oh, boy. Trolls even then, huh?
Trolls even then.
If the line was intended to bring a little bit of relief to what was a pretty ugly scene.
Yeah.
Sadly, that bit of humor, if that was the point of it, was lost in just what you were talking about, Jim. The two of them really overacted the whole thing. It seemed excessive.
I thought it was. At any rate,
it made you uncomfortable. What I was going to say was, I have a feeling if it made you uncomfortable, that was the objective.
Mm.
Was
probably so.
Was to just the worsening condition with Mike. And when Sheridan tries to break him apart, Mike just lays him out.
Well, I mean, Mike was manhandling this woman. Now that is not, uh-huh. that is not Mike's way. Okay.
No.
So whether it had been maybe a small plot hole, or if it was, as JP suggests, that the programming had kicked in and was getting progressively worse. He was manhandling this woman. Sheridan stepped in to put a stop to it, grabbed Mike by the arm, and got a face full of knuckles for his trouble.
Yep.
To me, the most important thing about this scene was as it ended, go back and look at Mike's face. When it's over, when the last words are said and the camera's looking at Mike, he looks to me like the programming turned off again to some extent, and he looks like I messed
up. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
I just messed
absolutely.
Up.
Absolutely.
It's almost like his programming is making him give a performance for some purpose or people.
Yeah.
Well, it took control from him.
Mm-hmm. And we'll see the resolution of this before the end of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
But what we learned from Sheridan in this was, what was the last thing he said to Mike, basically?
That's your free shot.
That's your free shot.
You get one for everything we've been through together, and that's it. The next time, I'll tear you to pieces.
Yep, and I don't think he meant security, throwing him out in the brig, or tossing him off the ship either.
No.
So.
Well, the fight is over.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Mike's gotten his free shot.
Yep. So about that pleasure.
Yes.
Thing.
Now it's time
Let's go for it.
Yeah, it's time to explore the pleasure centers. And
Sheridan walks in and
there's a studio audience.
Oh, God, that is the best way to describe it. Yeah.
Lanier and six other anonymous Minbari all standing there to make sure things don't get out of hand.
And Lanier seems as happy as
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I'm going to enjoy this, making sure that things don't go too far.
Or at least Bill Mumy.
Yeah. Here we are with these rituals again. Oh, man.
Oh, gosh. You've got that clip too, right?
I do.
Let's go for it.
Yes?
It's me. Glenn, you wouldn't believe the kind of day I had.
Yes?
I thought we were going to be alone. I mean, what are they?
They're here for the ritual. While we discover one another's pleasure centers, they wait outside to pray and meditate and ensure that things do not go too far. It is our tradition.
They're going to be out here?
Yes.
While we're in there?
Yes.
I can't. Delana. In front of others. No.
It matters to me that we do this properly, in keeping with the values and traditions of our people. As the engagement ring meant so much to you, our ceremonies mean just as much to us. Please stay.
I would love to see the blooper reel for this piece. I said it once, I'll say it again. How did she keep a straight face?
Yeah.
Bill Mumy pretty much wasn't. Oh, gosh. And what shall I say about the next morning? Woohoo?
Yeah. Yeah. Lanier is standing in the lift tube, and in walks Sheridan, and he just looks at him with this look on his face and goes, woo-hoo?
Yeah.
And just looks at him and then shakes his head. And Sheridan gets this funny little smirk on his face. And I don't want to know.
Yeah. Nothing else needs to be said.
Right. Moving right along.
Moving right along. Number one, back on Mars, gets the meeting set up that she was, Franklin and Marcus were looking for.
Right. And she lets them know that for some reason the motel has given them the honeymoon suite.
As she's inviting Franklin out to dinner.
Yes.
Well, it's a safe date.
Yeah. Yep. Well, she kind of extends it to everyone else, but Yeah, Mark Franklin doesn't, but Marcus certainly reads it right.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It was a...
She likes you. She likes you. And he's like, nah, she doesn't like me.
Franklin and the girl again.
Yeah, the thing of it is...
Of course she likes him.
Thing of it is this time you can't say anything about it.
Because
she's not his patient.
Yeah. Okay.
So,
okay.
You know...
You're right. I have to let that one slide.
Yeah, there's no violation of ethics in this case. So,
except for she's cheating on a spouse.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Marcus doesn't seem to object. And it's just dinner.
It's an open marriage.
It's just dinner for crying out loud. Okay, at this point,
that's a good point.
Oh, Steven.
No, stop it. All right, Mike.
Okay. Wrapping up the show.
Yes, please.
wrapping up the episode, at least.
Okay.
Mike, yeah, you started to say something about Mike.
Yeah, he's, I don't know. He's just really gone off the deep end.
Yeah, those guys that we still haven't been really introduced to yet kind of catch up with him. They're connected with whatever is up. We know who the whoever obviously has to be. It has to be Clark. But they seem to be connected with whatever's up in the works to bring down Sheridan.
But we're not trying to bring down Sheridan. We want to get him the help he needs.
And doesn't that sound Clarkish?
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That doctor that was on the TV.
Yes.
Yep. Sympathetic
supporting
figure.
Clark.
Get him the help he needs.
Yeah.
And Mike, when he engages with these guys this time, you notice what he says he saw and heard was not at all what happened.
No. Like I said, that makes you wonder, is that really what Mike's seen, or was he giving a performance for some specific purpose?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the circumstances, whether it was set up or whatever it was, have come around, and Mike is going to cooperate with the bad guys.
Yeah. He's going to help them with Sheridan.
Yeah. Because he's now convinced, Mike is convinced, that Sheridan has completely lost it. He's completely... gone round the bend, mm-hmm. and he is absolutely out of his mind, and he needs his help.
Yep. And that's where they end it.
Mm-hmm.
Leaving us wanting more.
Leaving us wanting a whole lot more.
And we'll get more.
We'll get more.
Oh, yes.
Pretty eclectic episode,
wasn't
it?
And our next episode up is 411, Lines of Communication.
Uh-huh.
And it'll be equally as interesting that episode as this one was, for some different reasons.
Yeah. Oh, we just got a message from our producer. It seems that he is dreaming in the City of Sorrows.
Yeah, that's because I said I wouldn't mention the name of the book, and in order to stop any confusion or speculation, the book
is... So now you gave him bad dreams.
To dream in the City of Sorrows.
What book?
The book I referred to earlier that I didn't give the title to.
Oh.
So at any rate, there it is. It's out there.
Yeah. But beyond that, it was a fantastic episode, as even though there were some extremely serious and disturbing moments, there was a, you know, and the situations that they were dealing with were important.
Yes.
There's a lot of brevity in it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is something we haven't had for a while.
No. And well, we're shifting gears now. Things are we're done with the Shadow War. We're done with that. Now we're turning towards getting the Earth situation straightened out a little bit. So we'll have to see how that works out.
Yep. Well, yeah, how that works out is going to be very interesting, especially in the case of Michael Iscariot, Judas Garibaldi. <Yeah. laughs> Take your...
Okay.
Well, you think about it. If if he's accusing Sheridan of going full-blown messianic, he's certainly going full-blown Judas Iscariot.
Yeah.
Except for he's betraying him with a punch to the nose instead of a kiss.
Yeah.
Benedict Arnold. Benedict Garibaldi. Mm-hmm. There we go. At any rate, what do you think, guys?
Yes, sir.
Did we have some boom today?
Well, we did on Mars.
We had two booms, I think.
We had some boom on
and
Mars.
And one in the Zocalo.
We can put all the slugging aside. That's not really boom. But we also had some room boom. Woo-hoo.
Woo-hoo, God.
Oh, Lord.
Hey, it wasn't me this time, guys. It wasn't me this time, Lisp fans.
Yeah, I was going to say, no, we had to. I think Garibaldi hitting John is a boom. That's a boom.
Yep. If Woohoo's a boom, then the knuckle sandwich is a boom too.
Oh yeah.
So three booms.
But
boom.
We'll
boom boom. Boom boom boom. I think is how Susan put it.
Yes. We'll be getting some bigger boom in our next very exciting episode.
Oh yeah, definitely some big boom in
Lines of communication.
Yes.
And we'll get some actual filler, from the standpoint of information at least, of some of the races that, or at least one of the races at least, that Jim's been referring to.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I guess we answered the question. Yes, there was boom today.
There will be boom tomorrow.
We answered that too.
There's always boom tomorrow.
Well, yeah, so I guess we can assume that.
Yes.
So you're right.
So
in that case, all that's left. Were we about to say the same thing again?
I was going to say, all we have left to do is say goodnight.
I was going to say that.
Okay.
Good night, everybody.
You say it. Okay.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night, and say good night, JP.
Good night, JP.
Oh, God. Podcast terminated. Thank you for listening to the Babylon Project podcast. You can email Raul and Jim at thebabylonprojectpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook at the Babylon Project Podcast. On the internet, we are at babylonprojectpodcast.wordpress.com. To subscribe to the podcast, you can find us on iTunes, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed on the webpage.